news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Is the Republican tide beginning to turn against Dear Leader? Donald Trump suffered two huge defeats Monday evening as House Republicans showed him what happens when you lose. The House reconvened on Monday to debate and vote on two bills. First up was the Cash Act. That's the bill version of Trump's demand for $2,000 direct payments to individuals instead of the $600 advocated for by Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin that Donald Trump called a disgrace. 130 Republicans voted against it, 44 voted in favor. All but two Democrats voted for the money. The two no votes, by the way, were Kurt Schrader of Oregon's 5th District and Dan Lipinski of Illinois. It was his parting shot, as Lipinski was primaried and beaten by progressive Marie Newman. The final tally was 275 to 134. The almost unanimous support from the Democrats ensured it got the two-thirds necessary under the procedures that were used for consideration. Next, the House took up and overwhelmingly voted to override Trump's veto of the National Defense Authorization Act. The final tally was 322 to 87. A good number of progressives voted no, though obviously not in support of the president, but in voting no for the annual massive windfall for the military-industrial complex. The $740 billion bill does include pay raises for America's soldiers, also modernization for equipment and provisions to require more scrutiny before troops are withdrawn from Germany or Afghanistan. Trump says he vetoed it because it contained a provision calling for the Pentagon to change the names of military bases that honor Confederate generals. He also says he vetoed it because he wanted it to include the repeal of a law offering liability protections to social media companies. But there's another component in the NDAA that hasn't received as much attention, but is likely a big reason why Trump issued that rare veto. According to Heather Cox Richardson, who writes a brilliant nightly newsletter, the NDAA also includes a measure known as the Corporate Transparency Act, the CTA, which targets shell companies and money laundering in America. The act requires the owners of any company that is not otherwise overseen by the federal government by filing taxes or through close regulation or something similar to file a report that identifies each person associated with the company who either owns 25% or more of it, or exercises substantial control over it. That report, including the names, birthdays, addresses, and identifying numbers, goes to the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, FinCEN. The measure also increases penalties for money laundering and streamlines cooperation between banks and foreign law enforcement authorities. The U.S. is currently the easiest place in the world for criminals to form an anonymous shell company, which then enables them to launder money, evade taxes, and engage in illegal payoff schemes. We learned about that a couple of months ago when Jason Leopold of BuzzFeed News and the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists dug into leaked documents from FinCEN. That's when they discovered shell companies moving money for criminals operating out of Russia, China, Iran, and Syria. We know that the Trump family uses shell companies. Trump's fixer, Michael Cohen, used a shell company to pay off Stormy Daniels. And just this month, we learned that Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, approved a shell company that spent more than $600 million in campaign funds. So the new requirements in the NDAA apply not just to future entities, but also to existing ones. So Congress needs to repass the NDAA over Trump's veto. Richardson surmises that it is likely that the CTA was included in this measure precisely because the NDAA is must-pass legislation. And both the CTA and the Defense Authorization Act bill into which it's tucked have bipartisan support. Again, Trump has objected to a number of things in the original bill, but has not publicly complained about the CTA. It'll be interesting to see if Congress repasses this bill in its original form, and if not, what changes it makes. And again, on Monday, the House passed the bill as written. It's just one more strand in Donald Trump's tangled web of lies and deception. And that brings us to Tuesday, when the action shifts to the Senate. The big question is whether Mitch McConnell will even bring the Cash Act up for a vote. It would need 60 to get through the chamber, meaning 12 Republicans would have to join with all the Democrats. Bernie Sanders, knowing how McConnell has operated during his time as Senate Majority Leader, issued a statement Monday evening saying that he will block the vote on overriding Trump's NDAA veto until McConnell schedules a vote on the $2,000 checks, threatening to delay the NDAA vote until January 1st and keep the Senate in session over the weekend. You go, Bernie. So not only have some House Republicans, for the first time, gone against Donald Trump's wishes, on Monday, Rupert Murdoch's New York Post decimated Trump in a front-page editorial, telling him he lost and that it was time to move on. Well, on Tuesday, it's the Wall Street Journal editorial board taking their shot, proclaiming, quote, Trump gives Schumer an assist. The president writes a $2,000 check to make Democrats the majority. Ooh, snap. Well, President-elect Joe Biden spoke to the American people Monday afternoon after addressing the Christmas Day bombing in Nashville, something Trump still hasn't mentioned. Biden moved on to call out Trump's mishandling of the transition in no uncertain terms. Biden accused Trump and his political appointees of obstructing the transition of power to his incoming administration, particularly in the national security sphere. This marks a distinct escalation in tone after reports of isolated difficulties in the transition process last week. As we approach the end of the year, thankfully, 2020 will go down in the history books as the planet's lost COVID year. Sadly, we end the year on a tragic and urgent note. The United States reported a record number of patients hospitalized with COVID-19 on Monday, 121,235, according to Johns Hopkins. With hospitalization rates this high, doctors are warning hospitals that they'll soon have to begin rationing care, essentially making life or death decisions about who gets the opportunity for treatment and who doesn't. Some hospitals are already employing battlefield-level triage techniques to keep pace with the number of patients pouring in. And as we approach the one-year mark of the pandemic, new figures released by the Chinese Center for Disease Control reveal the infection rate in Wuhan, where the virus first started, could have been 10 times higher than the original figures. Meanwhile, cases of that variant of COVID-19 that were discovered in the UK have been cropping up in other countries like South Korea and India. And Japan just announced that they are locking down for the next 30 days. Here in the U.S., as is their track record, the Trump administration completely screwed up the distribution of the newly available vaccines. They had promised something on the order of 20 million delivered vaccinations by the end of the year. Well, on December 29th, with 2 days remaining in said year, the number of vaccines injected stands at about one-tenth of that, or 2 million. 22 days. 22 days. 22 days. So the next big day in our move toward sanity is January 6th. Well, actually, it's January 5th. That's when Georgia goes to the polls in two separate Senate elections that will determine the control of the Senate in the 117th Congress. But I digress. The following day, January 6th, is when a joint session of the newly sworn Congress will convene with the Senate president, that is, the United States vice president, presiding for the final count and affirmation of each state's Electoral College results. It's usually just a bit of formality, pomp and circumstance, if you will. But it's also Donald Trump's last gasp chance to steal the election. He still refused to concede and is grasping at any available straws to stay in power. To that end, Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas and a group of Trump's defeated electors from Arizona filed a lawsuit Monday against Vice President Mike Pence, trying to force him to side with Trump allies who want to overturn his 2020 election loss. The Republicans have asked a federal court to rule that Pence has the exclusive authority to choose electors when he oversees the vote certification on January 6th. Despite President-elect Joe Biden's victory, Republican electors held their own votes earlier this month in a move to disrupt the official process, as Trump and his allies continue to make unfounded claims of widespread voter fraud. The lawsuit, which is widely considered to have no chance of succeeding, urges Pence to recognize the Republican electoral votes rather than the actual Democratic votes in those states. Again, you can't make this stuff up. Although no stunt of this sort has ever been successful, some have tried. Let's flash back to 2001. The Supreme Court had just stepped in and ordered Florida to stop counting votes in the race between Al Gore and George W. Bush, and effectively handed the presidency to Bush, but not before a number of House Democrats objected to the tally. As you'll hear, then Vice President Al Gore did his job as he presided over the flawed but final process of certifying those Electoral College votes. Again, what it takes is one member of the House and one member of the Senate to sign off on this objection, and then it would have to go to both chambers for them to vote on certifying their electors. Here's a bit of what happened in 2001.
Mr. President, there are many Americans who still believe that the results we are going to certify today are illegitimate.
Mr. President, the certificate of the electoral vote of the state of Florida seems to be regular and in form and authentic, and appears therefore and therefrom that George W. Bush of the state of Texas received 25 votes for president, and Dick Cheney of the state of Wyoming received 25 votes for vice president.
I must object because of the overwhelming evidence of official misconduct, deliberate fraud, and an attempt to suppress voter turnout.
The chair must remind members that under Section 18 of Title III...
Mr. President, I am objecting to the idea that votes in Florida were not counted, and it's a sad day in America, Mr. President, when we can't find a senator to sign
these
objections.
The gentleman will suspend.
Mr. Vice President, I rise to object to the fraudulent 25 Florida electoral votes.
Is the objection in writing and signed by a member of the House and a senator?
The objection is in writing, and I don't care that it is not signed by a member of the Senate.
The chair will advise that the rules do care, and the signature of a senator... The signature of a senator is required. The chair will again put that part of the question. Is the objection signed by a senator?
Mr. Vice President, there are gross violations of the Voting Rights Act from Florida.
The gentlewoman,
I object, and it is not signed by a senator.
The chair thanks the gentlewoman from California on the basis previously stated. The point of order may not be received. The whole number of the electors appointed to vote for President of the United States is 538, of which a majority is 270. George W. Bush of the state of Texas has received for President of the United States 271 votes. Al Gore of the state of Tennessee has received 266 votes. This announcement of the state of the vote by the President of the Senate shall be deemed a sufficient declaration of the persons elected President and Vice President of the United States, each for the term beginning on the 20th day of January 2001, and shall be entered, together with a list of the votes, on the journals of the Senate and the House of Representatives. May God bless our new President and our new Vice President, and may God bless the United States of America.
Maxine Waters wasn't the only Democrat in the House who objected, but she certainly was the best. One more bit of House business on the calendar. On Sunday, Nancy Pelosi must win a floor vote to regain the speakership for the next Congress. Lawmakers must be present in Washington and on the House floor to vote for Speaker. Proxy votes are not accepted in this instance. But several Democrats have COVID, and some have been really sick and unable to get to Washington. Politico reported Monday that Pelosi told Democrats that her, quote, opponent is COVID in the speaker race. But she then said, I'm fine, meaning she believes she'll win. Alrighty then. In other all too familiar news, the white Columbus, Ohio police officer who fatally shot an unarmed black man last week was fired on Monday. Columbus Police Chief Thomas Quinlan recommended firing Adam Coy, a 19-year veteran of the force, after determining that his shooting of Andre Hill was a, quote, unreasonable use of deadly force and an act of senseless violence. Body cam footage showed Coy shooting Hill 10 seconds into their encounter. Hill held up a cell phone as Coy and another officer arrived at a house where he was staying as a guest. Unbelievable. One more item regarding the January 5th runoff election in Georgia that will determine the control of the U.S. Senate. A federal judge ruled that more than 4,000 people in two Georgia counties were wrongly removed from voter rolls. The judge is Leslie Abrams Gardner. She said the counties had used unverified change of address data to invalidate registrations and that all those who were struck from the voter rolls must be reinstated. The vast majority of those registrations came from Muskogee County, which, according to Politico, leaned heavily toward President-elect Biden in November. A few hundred more came from Ben Hill County, which Donald Trump carried last month. Democratic Party attorney Mark Elias hailed the judge's decision as a, quote, blow to GOP voter suppression. We should also note that Judge Gardner, Judge Leslie Abrams Gardner, is the sister of Stacey Abrams, whose voter registration efforts in Georgia were widely credited with winning the state for Joe Biden. Let's hope for one more big win on January 6th. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.